So what about all the other families, though? Starting in verse 6, what about the sons of Ham? Right? The other ones. So look, Cush, Egypt, Put, and Canaan. Does any of those words sound familiar to you? Yeah, of course, Egypt and Cush is in the region of Ethiopia, right? All of these peoples that we're going to read, all of these sons that we're going to read in the rest of this chapter are the ancestors of people groups all over the world. Every people group that you're from can be traced back to one of these Shem, Ham, or Japheth, right? And I can't remember off the top of my head, but at some point I did the work and found out which one of these led to the Anglo-Saxon people, which is probably the closest thing to me. And so I just wanted to know just for my own curiosity's sake. But you can find all of these if you trace them down in history. But of course, those are the sons of Ham, Cush, Egypt, Put, Canaan. Sons of Cush, Seba, Havilah, Sabta, Rama, Sabdeka. The sons of Rama, Sheba, Dedan. You've heard of Sheba before, probably. You can tell you're in the region of North Africa and Egypt. Cush fathered Nimrod. And here's, by the way, if you're looking for names for your kids, right? That's one I will not recommend. Don't call someone Nimrod. I've actually heard of someone called Nimrod before. Call your dog Nimrod. I think that's fitting, right? Call your dog Nimrod. I love it. But Cush fathered Nimrod, and this is very, very important. Nimrod is most probably Gilgamesh. If any of you read the Epic of Gilgamesh in school, your kids certainly will hear, I think in 7th or 8th grade, in a couple of weeks. The mighty hunter Gilgamesh. What is he takes down the bull of heaven or something like that? Well, Nimrod was the mighty hunter. What? Wait, what? With an intestine face, and he takes him out too. So Gilgamesh, the mighty hunter, and that's probably Nimrod. There's quite a few studies that make the connection with almost certainty that it's the same person. There's many other studies that say Nimrod is actually Osiris, Thor, all of those people, Jupiter. Nimrod was the first deified man, the first god king this side of the flood. So, and you're going to see, I think somewhere in the text it points out, it doesn't say Nephilim, but it says something very similar, a similar type of godlike man. And so that's Nimrod. He's the first, deified man on this side of the flood. Some people believe he's Hercules, others Isis, others Krishna. So if you go to all these other pagan religions, you're going to find these deified godmen. Hercules is probably the one we know, or Thor. We know those the most. But that a lot of scholars trace that back to this man, Nimrod. He was the first on earth to be a mighty man. That's that word there. I can't remember off the top of my head. It's like Gerubim. I'd have to look it up. But it's kind of the same meaning as the Nephilim. He's a god man, a deified man, a Hercules. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord, which probably means, do what? Well, and and hunting wasn't wrong because God said after the flood that we could eat meat. But hunting wouldn't have existed before the flood. But I think the connotation in my studies, the connotation when it says a mighty hunter is that he's like arrogant. And it's sort of the idea of autonomy. Like he just kills whatever the heck he wants. And but it says before the Lord means probably something like, but God was watching him. He's doing all of this, but God's eyes are on him. And you've met people like that who just kill animals cruel. I don't know if y'all have met people or known people like that. I detest people who are cruel to animals, like do unnecessarily cruel things. That's something I think you got to repent of if that's something in your heart. The Proverbs say that you can know someone's heart by the way they treat their beast, their pets or their farm animals. The way they treat them, you can know what they're like. And so you meet someone that's hitting their puppy with a 2x4 or something like that. That's people like that. You can know that dude will knock you out too. He will do that to you if he gets an opportunity or if you incentivize it. So, but he's a mighty hunter. I think it has the connotation of being an autonomous, tyrannical, power-hungry, powerful person. But God was watching him. Therefore, it is said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before the Lord. So there's like a saying about him. He's Hercules. He's the big deal. Verse 10, the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. So now you know he's a bad dude. God hates him, and he hates God because he's got a kingdom. You know, God has a kingdom, but now Nimrod has a kingdom, and the start of his kingdom is Babel, which is really Babylon. It can go both ways. And you know Babylon, right? What was Babylon known for? Destroying God's people, that's right. Big, powerful, global empire. Not from Shem, but from Ham, right? And that's Babylon. And of course, we're going to get to the Tower of Babel, their big symbolic religious monstrosity that they built to commemorate their autonomy and their might and their humanistic religion. So the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calneh. And all of this is other giant cities and other civilizations in the land of Shinar, which is Mesopotamia. Y'all know Mesopotamia is you know, between the Euphrates and Tigris River, kind of like where people believe civilization began. Well, the Garden of Eden was destroyed in the flood, so it's not there anymore. But where the Garden of Eden was, I would say somewhere north of Israel. That's what I would say, if I had to guess, just because of those rivers. But who knows? Verse 11, from that land, he went into Assyria and built, and look at there, look what else he built, Nineveh. So he's not only the founder of the Babylonian Empire, he's also the founder of the Assyrian Empire. And what are the Assyrians known for? Killing Israel. So you got to understand, these are the kind of passages you'd probably just skim over, but they're actually laying the boundaries and the framework for the rest of the Bible, how the Bible will unfold. And in fact, like, you can't even read certain books of the Bible if you don't get this worldview in your head. Like, when I say Babylon, you have to think bigger than just an ancient city. Like, Babylon is like the capital of Satan. It's the capital of humanistic, tyrannical, anti-Christ, anti-God religion, you know. And it's begun by a powerful, mighty man, Nimrod, who's like a god king. It's a statist religion. It's a world system. See what I mean? I'm trying to get the idea of Babylon in your head. It's not just a city. It's a world system, an evil world system. In Assyria, same picture. And so this guy is the Hercules, the God-man, who founds these mighty evil world systems that attack the people of God. So Nimrod is basically what? He's an alternate Christ, is what he is. He has an alternate kingdom. He's a manifestation of Satan on earth, so to speak. Make sense? And Rehoboth, Ir, Kala, and Resen between Nineveh and Kala, that is the great city. So that's famous Nimrod. And verse 13, he goes on to name a few other people, and so I just wanted to read a few others. Verse 13, Egypt fathered Ludim, Anamim, Lehabim, Naphtahim, Pathrusim, Kasluhim, from whom the Philistines came. So now we know where the Philistines are from. You see how it's laying the groundwork for all the Bibles? So you got the Canaanites, you got Babylon, Assyria, you got the Philistines. If we did our research, you would find the Greeks in here and the Medo-Persians, all the enemies of God's people are all listed right here. And getting to verse 19, and the territory of the Canaanites extended from Sidon in the direction of Gerar, as far as Gaza, and in the direction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So it's laying the groundwork for that. And you see, this is very important to have this, because in a few chapters, Abraham's going to go to war with who? Yeah, with the kings. He's going to go to war with five kings, if I remember correctly. and he's going to rescue Lot from these evil kings. And so it's kind of laying the groundwork for Abraham as a preemptive Christ figure striking out against this evil kingdom. And so you're going to have this war, the kingdom of God and the kingdom of man, right here in the beginning. And these nations sort of create a mental picture of the rest of human history. And so when you read in the book of Revelation, when you read Babylon and you read Egypt, you have to think it's not literal. It's from this Hebrew worldview. Make sense? All right, verse 25. Let's go to Shem's lineage. We're almost done with all this lineage stuff. To Eber. Now, that's where the word Hebrew comes from. That's the Hebrews. So they took Eber's name instead of Abraham, but they took, you know, Abraham's God. So to Eber were born two sons. The name of the one was Peleg. That's the ancestor of Abraham. So why is it telling us about Peleg? More than likely because it's showing us the lineage to Abraham. You understand? So it's telling this huge grand story. All of man comes together in the Valley of Shinar in Mesopotamia, and they build a one-world religious state system and structure, and they put that tower in the middle. And they're going to be unified with one name, right, in rebellion to God. And what does God do? He diversifies them, right? They want to be unified, he diversifies them. They want to be the one, he turns them into the many and scatters them. And then he, the next chapter over, he finds Abraham, who will bring the one, to who will be the real integrating, uniting principle man, God-man, to bring all of mankind around on him. So it's not Nimrod, it's Christ. Or in this case, it's not Nimrod, it's Abraham. You see, are you getting the kind of, this is the kind of the idea that is being portrayed in this particular passage. It's deep stuff, and you got to know a lot about Christian philosophy and the Bible to get all this. But I think you can see a little bit of what's happening. So let's look at Shem's lineage. It's Eber, that's Hebrew. He has Peleg, that's the ancestor of Abram. For in his days the earth was divided, which probably just means the Tower of Babel. And his brother's name was Joktan. Why do we need to know about Joktan? Well, if you follow the lineage down, he's the father of Jobab, which is probably Job. And so he's kind of showing you, like, Job was a mighty king. You know, you don't get that part when you hear the sermons on Job. You get the, as Pastor Scott says, the positive alternative view of Job. But the real Job is a king, a warrior. And he goes through that suffering, and those advisors are his cabinet trying to take over the kingdom from him, using his suffering as an occasion to revolt against him. They're committing the sin of? Yeah, usurping, revolution, sin of Ham. They're going ham on him. They're revolutionaries. That's a theme in the Bible. This usurping theme is all over the Bible. They're trying to usurp Job. So Job, yeah, right? Don't go ham. I know, we got to get that in our psyche at Christ Church. Someone's like bad-mouthing the leadership. Hey, whoa, don't go ham on us now. But Job is a mighty king. He's a Christ figure as well, who saves his people, who sacrifices for his children, who suffers, and who has usurpers try to take his throne. Verse 32, these are the clans of the sons of Noah, according to their genealogies in their nations, and from these the nations spread abroad on the earth after the flood. So where do all the peoples come from? They spread out all over the earth from these people. God made them spread. We're going to read that story here in a second. All right, any questions, any thoughts on this?